Okay, today I'm at Chepstow Racecourse with David and Adrian Dent of Dent Fine Art. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today, guys. Can you give us a bit of a background, your background really? Were you born into like racing, sporting families, or artists?
Our grandfather and father were very, very much into their racing. But we had no real horse connection, although great-grandfather was a farrier. No art connection. We were the first artists in the family. But our dad worked at ICI, local to here, Pontypool. And he used to bring home great big reams of paper for us, which was from changing the nylon as it was spinning. And they were like huge toilet rolls, so we always had loads of paper. And he'd always encourage us to draw horses. And
which was his favourite thing.
So you had horses like Persian War, were a great inspiration. And also we liked Westerns, Champion the Wonder Horse, 7th Cavalry things. So we were always drawing horses. So you had people like Remington were as much an inspiration as the racing, if you like. Western movies.
So if you combine that with earliest memories being sat on a shelf in a bookies while my father's writing his betting slips out, gets in your blood.
Was there a sibling rivalry between you two who could draw the best?
Yeah, a little bit. I remember Dave being quite jealous because I won a competition when I was 11 in a Marvel comic for a Captain America strip that I did. So. Yeah, I don't think you liked that too much.
It was quite funny because when we had to go to Bristol, we had the check and it was made out in dollars from Marvel Comics, and he'd drawn Captain America, and our bank wouldn't accept a check written in dollars, so we had to go to Bristol for the day. I think it was $50 or $100 or something, but it was quite a lot of money.
It was when I was 11.
Yeah, yeah, back in the 70s. So.
It was interesting that you obviously diversified with your art in those days, because you don't just stick to horses now, and you do sort of fashion things and various other sort of topics. Where do you, I suppose this is probably a silly question, but where do you get your inspiration from for your art?
From you mentioned the fashion thing, as well as racing, we've always been into fashion and style. When I was at college, I did anthropology in my final year and studied youth style, youth culture. And so I was always interested in punk and mod and rockabilly and all that kind of thing. And on leaving college, I did 2 years anthropological research, and I went into supply teaching. But the interest in style got me into working with a photographer and styling fashion shoots and things like that. And I've been on and off doing that all through. You know, I might not do anything for a year, then do some fashion illustration, help out styling in a fashion show. And that culminated last year. I was styled my first show for London Fashion Week. So, and that was good because one of the items in the show I helped with the design for, printed the silk with a digital lining and everything in silk, and that was on the catwalk, but there were 20 something looks, and it was for Fashion for Conservation, so 20 different designers, and it appeared in Vogue, the whole thing, and I was so gutted because my name wasn't mentioned, but I did style the whole show, so which was nice. You do fashion illustration. To me, fashion is an extension of art, if you like.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and we've always been into our music and our from punk to mod to skinhead, all the sort of fashions that anything different really that goes hand in hand with the music and the art. Yeah. I think.
And we promoted bands a fair bit. We used to have a lot to do with the before the 60-foot Dolls, there was a band called the Blood Brothers, and before that they were the Colours. It's Richard Parfitt, he was always involved, so we promoted those a bit. The Darling Buds, band in London called Trudy. So we always had a connection with the music element as well, and we did quite a bit with doing combination things like fashion shows and music and bands, fashion shows and art exhibition all under one roof. Got involved with burlesque artists when the burlesque scene started in earnest. And it's nice because Betsy Rose is now the number one burlesque act in Britain. So and she performed with us quite a lot in the early days. We were going back about eight years ago, I suppose. Yeah, so it's all connected. It's all about expression and the art, and the passion comes into it. If you've got a passion for music, passion for horses, a passion for fashion, we've just followed our passions, really. And if we can share our passion with others, that's what it's about.
You mentioned passion there, because obviously, looking behind you at Chepstow Racecourse, horses, there's several different styles. You seem to, most artists, drawing one or painted one style. Mm-hmm. You guys seem to be able to flip it around and do abstract stuff and then do real life stuff and everything in between.
Yeah.
At what point do you decide what style you're going to do something in?
I think you've just got to try and keep it fresh all the time, and yeah, well, like, again, drawing the music analogies, you've got to, like people like Bowie reinventing themselves all the time and producing more modern work and progressing with your artwork. I think that's the inspiration for that, is to keep pushing the boundaries and see what you are capable of.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you mentioned there, again, with the music. If you're an artist, you're expected to stick to one particular style, but that's so restricting, and we just do what we want to, really. And I don't feel obligated to stick to a particular style. I mean, if you have a band, like, people criticise bands when they do it, they say, oh, a status quo, it's all the same, you know. But when artists sort of diverge, it makes people uncomfortable, I think. But I you know, that doesn't bother me particularly if we don't fit in a box and a particular technique or style. It's tough. We just do what we like to do.
Do you flip flop back and forth? So do you revisit some of your earlier periods of style?
Definitely. Yeah. I did some very futuristic kind of Art Deco, almost propaganda poster type, very strong, futurist kind of pictures of horses, going back into the 80s, and I revisited that about 10 years ago with Cato Starr and Denman, and I did two big oils that I fitted together, very in that style, and they were exhibited at the Society of Equestrian Artists exhibition at the Mall Galleries, and to great success. They had a good reception. So.
Okay, guys, obviously now you appear to be very busy. See you on a lot of race courses, selling your wares. What would be, somebody gives you a call and rings up and says, we want you to paint something for us, a one-off, what would be, both of you, what would be your ideal dream job if somebody calls up for you to do something for them?
I like, it depends what they want. So if they want their own horse in or something, I like a strong action myself. But also I like doing things like getting the atmosphere of the races. So I like to do scenes with bookmakers, and I did one for Greg Hughes, the Irish bookmaker, of a scene at Cheltenham where he's paying out on a winning wager, and then you've got all characters, different people from the races, you know, and it's nice then, one, because we had it on show at Cheltenham before we picked it up, and it was nice because people could spot themselves in it, which is good. And I think you were in that, Simon, at one point.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
So, about you, Adrian, what would be if
I love, you know, painting the action, the sort of Gold Cup winners, the champion hurdlers, everything, you know, and particularly my favourite horses myself, and you do those for, you know, to exhibit, and when the actual owners or connections, trainers, appreciate that and buy it, that's a real kick, that you've captured something that means a lot to them.
And the jockeys as well, of course.
Yeah.
We've done paintings for Joe Tizard and Paddy Brennan, and going back in time for Peter Scudamore,
Fitzgerald.
Paul
Nichols was the first jockey to ever buy a painting off us,
actually. He was the first jockey, and it was about a second time of exhibiting at Chepstow Racecourse, must have been 86 or something.
Something like that.
And we done a painting and he liked it, and he wanted one of him winning on play school.
Yeah.
So we did one of, Adrian did one of play school,
yeah,
and Paul bought it.
Okay, you mentioned 86. So how long have you been Dent Fine Art as a couple, as a pair, as a business?
Since 85.
Yeah, it'd be about 85, I think, something like that.
My father had cancer, and I was, as I was saying, doing a lot of anthropological research, bit of supply teaching, and in London and also Bristol. And then when my dad got ill, I came home and stayed with him. And then the last week, we spent 6 months basically with him.
Yeah, nursing him
and watching the racing. We had sort of nurses round in the evening, so it was quite nice. Half a dozen nurses visiting him every night, and we'd play Escalado and have a drink. And even though he was dying of cancer, those 6 months were really important.
Always grateful that we actually got some time to spend with him, and if you like, put everything in order first, because I was a bit of a tearaway, a bit of a wild man at the time, youth, and sort of when my father got ill and nursing him and everything sort of made me grow up overnight, really. And
I can remember.
So every cloud has a silver lining in a way.
Yeah, that was I guess how we bonded. And we were, Adrian was doing, he'd gone back to school to finish his A-levels as a mature student, you know, because he'd been expelled when he was younger. And he was doing his A-level art, and he was painting Slip Anchor at this time as well. And that was my dad's favourite horse, and even before he won the Derby, said this, he had his last big double up was Slip Anchor and Oh So Sharp, you know, for the Derby and Oaks double. So, and he was painting them after the Derby. So that was a good time.
My other half of my A-level work was the miners' strike with Arthur Scargill. So I used to go around all the pits in South Wales filming all the sort of mounted horses charging the picket lines and the running fights. I had some great fun with that, photographing all that and doing some paintings of it. But when it went off to be marked, all the horse racing stuff came back, and all the miners stuff just disappeared. So I don't know who ended up with that.
So what now, you're obviously well-known for starting a lot of race courses. Where else do you sell your stuff? You got a website, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we have a website. We also have exhibited abroad quite a lot. Harder bits are in the Czech Republic, St Moritz in Switzerland, Punchestown in Ireland.
Prague
race course, which is a beautiful race course. People forget about that. It's, you know, 4 miles outside Prague, and it's a lovely flat race course. We even had a syndicate out there, about 12 of us, 6 Czechs and 6 British people, and we had 3 horses in training between us, and I think the training fees are £40 a week, so between 12 is peanuts, you know?
Yeah, so we had some fun with that.
We had some fun with that, and the one horse won at Prague 3 times, I think. So that was good, and then we've been to Baden-Baden, Deauville, we exhibited for many years in the summer. Auteuil, quite a few other race courses as well around Europe. Yeah.
Anybody seeing you in Cheltenham, especially the Montpellier Wine Bar, knows that you sort of like the lifestyle, you like to enjoy yourselves. Is that important for you, as well as, you know, forgetting the atmosphere with your paintings?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've got to enjoy it.
And you can throw yourself into the whole thing.
Lifestyle, yeah. You know, and it's the same with the fashion scene, the racing scene. You know, it's got to be enjoyable. And I think I can remember it, in London, going back maybe 20 years ago, we'd go to the fifth floor cafe at Harvey Nichols, and you'd go in there and there'd be a couple of fashion models, there'd be a few trainers, there'd be Di Williams sat at the bar there or something like that, and there'd be bands. He was training for Duran Duran at one time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And I think trainers, jockeys, they need to get out there and do that a bit more. It's got a bit professional, I think. They go to bed early and they don't drink and don't smoke so much. And I think that's sort of not as lively a scene as it was.
It's become more of a business. The whole thing, and the jockeys nowadays are devoted to it. You know, in the old days, I remember the Cheltenham Festival, not won't name any names, but you'd have jockeys rolling back to the hotel all half 4 or 5 in the morning, could hardly stand up, and they're racing the next day. So we've had some fun times, fair amount of them.
Right, as well as being fine artists, you're also campaigners, at least at the moment, and your current campaign is to save Kempton Park. Can you tell us a little bit about why you feel so strongly, especially, you know, you're not sort of live near there or anything? What is the, what? Why are you compelled to save Kempton Park?
Well, I think for me, the one of the main, the greatest things about racing is it's a country rural sport, basically. And racing is one of those rural activities that help protect green spaces. And as well as Kempton being London's track, if you like, it's also a very beautiful green space in London. And it's got the water there, and wildlife, swans, birds. It's something that belongs to London. And I think if they lose Kempton, apart from, I know you've got Ascot and Sandown not far away, but Kempton is just 20 minutes from Clapham Junction, and that's special. I was horrified when I just could not believe that somebody in charge of racing could come up with the idea to close the main track in London. And it was madness to me. And I thought that, you know, we eventually come to a time where you have property developers wanting to buy up race courses and smaller race courses, but I didn't think those entrusted to protect racing would actually think of selling off one of its best assets.
The history of the place as well. I mean, it's a special place for, I mean, we used to go up there and watch Desert Orchid. The statues are there, I think. Is he buried there as well, I think? So, you know, the amount of history of the place, and to think, conceive to shut it down, I think it's not only it's terrible coming from the jockey club and those who run the jockey club. It's just a betrayal of racing and shows a failure on their part. I mean, if they can't market something to London that close, I think they have failed, and they need to rethink their whole strategy with racing in regards to London. And I just cannot believe that they were considering this for a quick buck that might be a short term fix for a few years, but then once it's gone, it's gone. And I think that creeping into racing a lot over the last 10 years are people who do not believe in the sport, haven't got a passion for the sport, and they're just looking at things as figures. That's surely no good for the future of racing.
Looking at it apart from sentimental value, I spent 9 years going to Kempton Park. There's nobody there. During the week, the all-weather racing. I know it's bread and butter. I know it's mainly to keep the betting shops open.
But that's
very poorly supported for national hunt racing as well. Apart from the one big day.
But I think that's a failure of the sport. Those in charge with promoting the sport. It's a massive failure on their part of not promoting it properly. They've got no idea how to promote the sport to ethnic minorities. My girlfriend, who's a fashion designer, she loves it. She's from Serbia. But she's in London. She didn't know about Kempton Park because there's no racing in the Evening Standard. There's no racing in the Metro. That's a massive tourist centre, London, so we're missing out on the tourist thing as well. But my girlfriend lives in Crystal Palace. I go in the local bookies in Crystal Palace. It's absolutely packed. Absolutely packed every single day with West Indians, Asian guys. The atmosphere is great. And I asked them, I said, why didn't you go to Kempton? And they said, well, it's expensive. We see the adverts for Sandown and Ascot, and it's always expensive. It's Cheltenham or whatever on the tube, and they think of it, it's going to be £100. I said, no, the kids go free. I said, it's about £20. £20 is like a £12 on a weekday at Hampton. And since then, quite a few of them have been going. But it just needs to get the message out. Instead of hanging around in the bookies all day, come down to Kempton.
Do you think that the, because a lot of my previous guests have talked about the struggle with diversity with horse racing, do you think that it is just a cost thing? Because if they can sit in the betting shop all day betting, they can surely afford £18 or whatever. Or do you think that racing needs to go further to try and make people of, you know, ethnic minorities feel welcome?
I think they do.
I mean, we've taken quite a lot of people racing over the years, and they've got the like Bengali boys, Polish, Czechs, Russians, you know.
And this time last year we had, it's the rugby today, but this time last year there was a ladies' fashion day. So we put on a fashion show in the marquee. We had Crombie Gentleman's Outfit as sponsoring it. And it was a really nice day, and I got 12 models. One of whom was from, it's between Japan, North Korea and Russia, the very far east of Russia. And Sakhalin, is it? She was from there. And she'd been in London 2-3 years, modelling and doing a degree. And she was so excited when I asked her. And she, this is a girl who's appeared in Vogue regularly, London Fashion Week regularly. She was so excited because she said, I thought when I came to England, I thought horse racing. And yet in London, nobody goes, nobody talks about it. So I didn't have anybody to go with. And we need to be reaching out to people like that.
How would you do that? If you were given the task?
I would make sure that you've got, the racing's much more active in terms of promoting things in central London.
And I think with schools as well, they need to do a lot more work with schools, and it's a big industry. It's crying out for staff as well. Stable lads, stable lassies. We need to recruit these people. It's not just the race goers. And so a lot of work needs to be done in schools, and we should be out there getting the young kids out riding somehow.
It's also great. You've got the Ebony Pony Club, I think, in Brixton. That's fantastic. There, yeah. And you've got racing for schools. You know, it shouldn't be just those few initiatives. This should be, you know, done at the top level. They need to get racing into schools. It's a massive industry. And most teachers in schools probably don't touch it because they think they'll bet in. Well, you can bet on football, but there's nobody trying to block football from being in schools. I'm not that interested in betting. It's the spectacle, it's the industry, the breeding. It's very cerebral, horse racing. And the
amount of different people you meet all with a common bond, really. Once it's in your blood, it's in your blood. I think everyone who comes racing agrees with that. We just need to be reaching out to earlier, younger to people. I think racing's missed a generation.
I think it has. Totally. And I think it's not being on mainstream TV is a problem.
Yeah.
Because the same thing, and people think, oh well, young people, they're more sort of animal rights or evading. That's rubbish. What it is, I think, because if you look at Speedway was a massive sport in the 50s, 60s, 70s. It went to Sky, disappeared off the radar for everyone. Doesn't appear, you don't get the results in the papers anymore. Nobody knows about Speedway. And horse racing would go that way. They have to get it back in the Evening Standard. They have to get some, even if the coverage is on the racing TV, and I do get that, it's money and everything, but they need to be saying to BBC for the news. We watched the sport on the news this morning. There's all these sort of minor sports. I'm going to get killed for this, but ladies football, which is all right, it's all very well, have it, yeah, but horse racing is a huge sport, and it needs to be present in that little slot when BBC do their breakfast time sports reporting. For racing not to be in that is disgraceful, and I don't know whose fault that, whether it's some kind of prejudice at the BBC or whether it's a lack of push from those in charge to promote it. and say, hey, come on, you're not representing second or third biggest spectator sport in Britain here. What's going on?
So you think that rather than just wave the white flag and say, Kempton, the jockey club should invest some money, see what they can do to get people actually going there, and then do their figures again?
And also, since campaigning, starting this campaign, we've got quite a lot of people in the group now that the local people and the realisation of how that green space is such an important part of their lives. It's not just the horse racing industry; it's very important as greenbelt land as well.
And I think that's another problem we touched on there. You might say, well, why don't the locals support Kempton more? I don't think racing generally is reaching out to the communities enough.
No.
Years ago, we'd go to Wincanton, well, a Wincanton race day, it was half day closing. So everybody in the shops, the butcher, whatever, candlestick maker, they'd be all closing up their shops, go midday, racing. Go racing. Same in Chepstow. I don't know if there's any kind of liaison like that anymore with the local communities.
I think there's all sorts you could do. You could offer discounts to people who produce their council tax forms. They live in the locality. There's just not enough work done with local councils as well. They're usually at, the racecourse and the council are usually at opposite ends of things, and more needs to be done to work together, more coalitions.
And I think with Kempton, it's not just the local, you've got London, you've got 12 million people, and they can't get the crowds. Well, somebody wants shooting at the top, they can't do that. I mean, for example, you've got London Fashion Week this week. If I had a London racecourse, I'd be thinking, right, what can we do with them? Let's reach out to the people organising London Fashion. Can we have some parties here? Can we have some shows here? What's wrong with that? Why aren't they doing that?
You're talking quite strongly there about the powers that be. But at the moment, I think nobody would really argue that it's not even one meeting, it's one race that people go to Kempton Park for. 20,000 people turn up there once a year. Would it not guarantee the... Because Sandown is in a very, very rich area, Esher. I mean, that land would be worth a fortune in comparison to Kempton. Would it not at least safeguard Sandown if the King George's moved there and they sold Kempton to Barrett Homes, whoever it is, wants to buy it? The heritage of the race would still carry on like the Lincoln has.
No, I don't think so. It's the King George, the ground, the track throws up different results to what Sandown would do. They'd have much deeper ground. I think the big mistake was the all weather. I think the powers that be thought that if they had regular race days and nights, people in London would know those race days and nights, like the dog tracks.
Know.
But there's no dog tracks left, is there?
And but there were. You go back to Walthamstow Dogs; it was absolutely buzzing of an evening. They had a nightclub next door. If you paid to go into Dogs, you got into the nightclub free, which was quite an expensive nightclub. They used to do that at Eastville Stadium with the Speedway as well. They had a nightclub at the...
I think that's another thing racecourses are doing through. If you have a membership of a club, why not have a club on site? Like a sports club or cons club or a workingman's club. Make it a racegoers, so the locals get involved and there's other things going on at the race course, not just weddings or exhibitions, but actual community things.
It's bubbled under the radar a bit recently, it's sort of disappeared a bit. If it comes back and it looks like solid plans, they're going to flog it. How active are you guys going to be with your group?
Well,
can people that feel strongly as you do get hold of you and sort of put ideas towards you?
We're on Facebook. You just look up the Save Kempton Park campaign, or Twitter.
Twitter as well. There's thousands and thousands of followers. It's all gone very quiet, and no one at the top has ever answered any of our questions or anybody else's questions the locals, and I think they're hoping it sneaked under the radar, but I assure you that none of us are going to allow it to
we're to just waiting
go
the,
quietly.
The ball's in their court, they know we exist, they totally ignored us. We have trainers, we have a lot of trainers, jockeys, owners supporting us. They're frightened to put their heads above the parapet at the moment. I know Nicky Henderson's been very vocal, and other people, and I think, you know, they've mentioned that Kempton, what we were talking about earlier, that Kempton is a specific course. When they moved the rehearsal chase from Chepstow to Newcastle, it wasn't the same. Nobody knows rehearsal chase anymore, and I think that's what will happen to the King George. It'll just become another race. You know?
Are Kempton themselves supporting you? Or the management at Kempton Park support you, or are they? I realise they're also jockey club. They are jockey club, but
there's quite a few people who do not want to be identified, and that says something in its own right. And there have been a few cases of bullying within the group by people expressing their opinions. Again, not mentioning names, but
okay. So just a final word then to the jockey club, if they're watching. Hopefully they do watch it occasionally. What would you say to them briefly about Kempton Park?
I say, don't close it. Don't even think about closing it. There's no point selling the family silver, and get active on marking it and making it work.
And to do that, you've got to believe in the product. And
if you don't believe in the product, step down.
Step down.
New Betting People interviews are published every week at Star Sports. Exclusive interviews with the key people from the world of sports betting. Check out our full library of interviews at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.